Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Rudzewski, here with Greg Baer. We're the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging and relevant learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
On today's episode, we're talking with Paula Kerger, President and CEO of PBS. Every year, 67% of American households watch PBS. And for parents, families, and educators, PBS Kids and PBS Learning Media are among the most popular and the most trusted sources of educational media for children. Paula Kerger, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Thank you. I am so happy to be here on what is clearly the best podcast ever created on Earth.
The best and the only podcast.
applause button. Paula, for more than 17 years, you have led PBS, making you the longest serving president and CEO in PBS history. That deserves another applause button. And Paula, you are widely credited with leading PBS's transformation from a television broadcaster to a multi-platform digital media organization. So let's start with how things have changed over that time. Can you give us the 30,000-foot view of how children and families' media habits have evolved? It used to be just television, and now it's so very much more.
Yeah, and I think about in the time since I came to PBS, which was 2006, media consumption has completely changed. And for children, I think in particular, where they are looking for content and the way they interact with content has completely changed. You know, in the earlier days, actually my first days of work at PBS, it was pre-iPad. And I think kids today are completely living in a digital world. They're surrounded by entertainment and education. Games are a significant way that kids engage with content. Everything is a click away. I think a lot of people have the experience of watching a small child totter over to a television set for those homes that still have them and watch them trying to use their finger to pass over the screen as if it was an interactive screen like you'd have on a tablet or a smartphone. And kids are also now very accustomed to watching whatever content they want on their terms and just moving around seamlessly between various pieces of content.
You know, I'm feeling like a dinosaur here. I mean, this was back in the 70s and 80s that I was watching PBS, and it was an occasion when Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood came on or Sesame Street, and those were set hours. And if you missed them, you missed them, right? So dust off your future crystal ball a little bit. Where do you see things going from here? Are there some trends that maybe both excite you and also give you pause?
There's a lot that we're watching in children's media right now because so much is changing. We still do have a lot of children that watch us over the air, and we are very much focused on children in low-income homes. And for many children, over-the-air broadcast is still the way they connect. The home may have, you know, some cable access or other broadband access, but kids oftentimes are using the old sets, and that may be broadcast television. Alongside that, a lot of children are engaging on content on tablets, on smartphones, and frequently that content is in the form of games. Now, for those of us who work in educational children's media, that's actually an exciting proposition because games are interactive. And while watching a wonderful show on PBS Kids that is a linear broadcast, the amount of engagement increases tremendously if kids are actually working through that content through games and other interactions. And I just think it creates an experience that we've been excited about for a long time. We've actually been working on kids' games for many years. And as we think about kids looking forward, kids are actually playing more games than they are watching linear video. We are spending time developing games that can be downloaded into a phone or a tablet when a parent has access to broadband and can be played offline. And I think those are some of the ways that we're thinking about how do we touch kids in the future. The other trend that we see that is actually a concerning one is the amount of time that kids are spending on spaces like YouTube. Now, we put some of our content on YouTube as well, and we know that it is a place that parents will point kids towards for content, but there is a lot of viewing of content by children on YouTube that is not really appropriate for kids. And you see series that are designed really for much older kids, or in some cases, even adults, where kids are spending a lot of time. You also see content that is developed by people who are not really in the same business that we are. And the content may seem nice and entertaining, but it doesn't have that same educational value to it. It isn't created by educators and people who are very focused on the kinds of skills that kids need to master before they enter school for the first time.
So when we think about these trends, both the positive and the negative, and when we think about this fundamentally different media landscape, this landscape in which kids and families have more options than ever before, where does PBS fit in? You know, what does PBS provide that's special or unique and necessary amid today's media landscape?
So what differentiates us, certainly, not only is our content safe and appropriate for kids, and particularly our youngest kids, but all of our content is developed around core educational standards. And our content has evolved over the years as we learn more and more about how children learn. It also has evolved as we understand from teachers what skills kids need to master when they enter school for the first time. So obviously, our content has always focused on core literacy skills, core math skills. We also focus on social emotional skills, so that these are things like how to help kids pay attention and manage their emotions like anger and really be able to sit and focus while they're in the classroom. All of these things are really important. How to share, or as Fred Rogers used to say, how to be a good neighbor. These are all the kinds of skills that we work on and develop. Our programming is developed in partnership with educators around this curriculum. We try to envision all of the skills around a, you know, sort of a whole child, so that each of the programs that we develop sort of complement others, so that it is a true experience. And we also think of what the needs of very young children, you know, with shows like Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, to some of the programs for older children, as well as programs we develop for kids with special needs. We just launched a series called Carl the Collector, of which two of the key characters are on the autism spectrum. And we wanted to create a series that would not only help those children see themselves and their own experiences reflected, but also be helpful to the kids around them to understand that not all children experience the world in the same way.
So as a parent of an almost three-year-old who's just learning to love television and media, first of all, thank you. And second of all, can you tell me a little bit more? Because for me, and I imagine for lots of our listeners, when we think PBS, we think Mr. Rogers. We think some of the local programming that we might have grown up with. You mentioned a few programs that I'm not familiar with. Can you talk about some PBS programming that particularly excites you? Programs that some of our listeners might not be familiar with.
You know, you mentioned Fred Rogers, and his lineage actually carries all the way through the programs that we produce today. He was such an extraordinary visionary. So much of what he understood, both in the pacing of the shows, his use of humor, but more importantly, his use of music to help reinforce lessons. And you see some of those same ideas continue to play out in the programs that we produce now. The direct descendant of Mr. Rogers, which is our most popular show on television, is a show called Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. And Daniel Tiger is the son of Daniel Striped Tiger, for those that remember Mr. Rogers. And it is a show that deals with everything from issues like how to control your temper, how to deal with disappointment, to lessons on potty training and just other kinds of skills that young children need to master. That is a show that is hugely popular. So I think Daniel is an important part of our schedule. For slightly older kids, is one of our other very popular shows are the Kratz Creatures. And that's a series that's produced by Martin and Chris Kratt that helps children really understand the natural world and not only our place in it, but that we are surrounded by amazing creatures with amazing creature skills, and helps kids really think about what that means and even the larger question of our role as stewards of this planet. But it helps kids learn about just the great diversity of animals and gets kids really excited about the outdoors. I mentioned Carl the Collector. That's our newest series. Carl is a raccoon. He has two bunny friends who also are twins, but they are very different in personality. So there's a lot in the series that I think all kids can relate to. We look at the same types of things that if you were producing a program for commercial media, you would pay attention to. How do you get kids to be excited about the program and care about the characters and watch? But we also make sure that what we have included in what we've built are real skills that will set your child on a path to be not just ready for school, but really excited about learning, excited about the world around them.
This is Greg Baer here with Ryan Rudzeski, and we're talking with Paula Kerger, President and CEO of PBS. Paula, you know that we here at Remaking Tomorrow take deep and daily inspiration from America's favorite neighbor, Mr. Fred Rogers. You spoke about him earlier in the context of PBS's programming and that legacy and how it impacts media producers today. We're curious how Fred inspires you and your leadership, because there you've been at the helm for nearly two decades at PBS. And Fred, in so many ways, embodied powerful educational potential. And it's what you've represented so powerfully. And how do you find inspiration today in Fred Rogers or some of the other folks who created the legacy that you're now stewarding?
You know, I meet so many people who grew up watching Fred Rogers. I was a little old for Fred, but I had a much younger brother who watched Fred Rogers. And he was always mesmerized when Fred would look into the screen and say things like, "I like you just the way you are." You know, I think for so many children, that is so empowering. I often describe some of the work we do based on some of the feedback that we get from people that write in. And I remember getting a letter from a woman who lived in a very difficult circumstance at home. And Fred Rogers for her was everything because she didn't get that kind of reinforcement from her family. And he made her feel special. And he made her feel that she had the ability to be what she turned out to be. She eventually became a medical doctor. And she wrote to us because she just felt so grateful for the fact that he had had such an impact on her life. He also was so deeply dedicated to this idea of community. And I think a lot about Fred right now, because I feel that part of what we need to be able to do community by community, or certainly as a country, is be able to better listen to one another and support one another. And as Fred said it so beautifully, to be a good neighbor. And what does that mean? One looks out after each other, one treats each other with respect. And I think to me, that is so very powerful.
And Fred, of course, also gave us the neighborhood, right? When we think about PBS, at least my mind goes to watching television at home in my living room with my children. But there are PBS stations across the nation doing lots of work in classrooms and in schools and all sorts of different learning spaces. Can you tell us a bit more about that work? For educators who are listening who maybe don't know or aren't familiar, what is PBS out there doing for them? What might they be able to take advantage of?
So, you know, at the heart, public broadcasting is educational broadcasting, it's educational television, it's educational media. And so we were always envisioned as being a place for learning, and whether that's lifelong learning for older viewers or whether it is true K-12 type of content, it's always been a part of what we do. If you look at series like Nova or Nature or any of those, the Ken Burns series, we've always created educational content. Once classrooms had access to the internet, that changed everything. We created something called Learning Media, which is a free K-12 service that teachers can access. It's designed specifically for teachers, and content is built specifically for classrooms. So it's often not the full show, but it's pieces all correlated against local standards around math, around science, around history, around language arts and so forth. It's a great resource. It's heavily used by teachers. It's heavily used by homeschoolers as well. And it's available free. As I described a little while ago, so many kids are enjoying our content through games. And many schools give kids Chromebooks. We encourage schools to make sure that the PBS Kids app is downloaded. And we know during the school day, we see spikes in the usage of our early childhood material by kids that are during the free time. Teachers will schedule time for kids to be able to play on their Chromebooks, the PBS games, and those games all have core curriculum embedded in them. That educational material, of course, can also be used at home, but we're a very active part of the education life of kids, as well as teachers. You know, teachers use our content more than anyone else, and so making sure that we're supporting them with content that will bring the educational experience to life for kids and create more assets they can use in the classroom is a big piece of who we are and what we do.
You know, the scope of PBS's impact has always been and continues to be just amazing. You're in homes, you're in classrooms, you're in all sorts of learning spaces where kids and families already are. I'm wondering, when you think about PBS and its impact, you know, is there one story that you tell or maybe one young person or one family that you know of that really embodies why you do what you do at PBS?
I've spent a lot of the time that I've been at PBS traveling and visiting with our stations, and in doing that, visit with families and with viewers as well as our station managers. Everywhere I go, people tell me these compelling stories. And for me, you know, I was talking a few minutes ago about the launch of our new series, Carl. We knew that in the work that we do, we were reaching a lot of kids. And there are some kids that are on the spectrum that are confused by people's faces, can't read emotion very well, but really are drawn to our animated characters and particularly the Muppets. And early on, when I first started working here, I was in an event, a woman pulled me aside, and she said, "You were so important in my family's life." And she said, "My son is challenged, is profoundly challenged, and does not speak." And he actually was watching Sesame Street in the family room, and I heard a noise. And I walked into the room, and he was speaking to the television. He was repeating what the Muppet had said to him. And somehow, it had cracked something through in his brain. It had activated something, and he was able to respond to it in kind. To me, it just gave me chills, because I think for that mom and for that family, for whom this was just such a breakthrough moment. And it was just a little moment that we were a part of making happen. This is why, you know, some years later, when this idea of Carl came to us, I just knew that we had the power through the media that we controlled that we would make a huge difference.
Paula, that plays out every day all across America in millions of homes. And if I were to look just at my home, the moments I've had with my kids watching the PBS Kids series, or now as they're getting older, engaging in documentaries and hard conversations about difficult topics, you are opening so many doors for so many families all across America in so many ways, and we're grateful to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. That means a lot.
Now, before we go, we have just one more question for you. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
From my perspective, as we look at what parents and educators can do together, I think is creating an opportunity for wonder. You know, when you're talking to a child about something that just seems magical and you can just see their eyes open, I think oftentimes we begin to focus on those things that are just very practical skills. You know, my child needs to learn these numbers or these letters or so forth. But for me, creating the sense of possibility and the wonder that surrounds us, and really kindling this need for always striving to learn and to grow, is probably the biggest thing that parents and educators can do for children. It sort of sets them off on a path. It's not just teaching them things that's going to help them pass the next test or pass on to the next grade. It's teaching them a love of learning that they'll carry with them for the rest of their lives. And to me, that's the biggest thing that we can give our children.
Thank you so much to Paula Kerger, President and CEO of PBS. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.